Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
There is no cause for self-satisfaction in the long denial of equal rights of millions of Americans. But there is cause for hope and for faith in our democracy and what is happening here tonight.
President Lyndon Johnson, from the first 100 days of his elected term in 1965. And the Supreme Court's voting rights case yesterday revolves around the issue of whether whole states and cities, including New York City, by the way, should still be singled out by Washington as uniquely prone to racist disenfranchisement. The backdrop, the election of our first black president, Congress itself renewing the Voting Rights Act consistently every 5 years, and the likely power of one man in this case, as we just heard from Dahlia Lithwick, Justice Anthony Kennedy, seen as the swing vote to break an otherwise predictable 4-4 tie. He asked a lot of skeptical questions about the act at yesterday's hearing. We will get opposing views on the case now from Debo Adegbole. He's director of litigation for the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund, and Abigail Thernstrom, author of a forthcoming book, Voting Rights and Wrongs, The Elusive Quest for Racially Fair Elections, which will argue against the need for at least this part of the Voting Rights Act, maybe the whole Voting Rights Act anymore. She is vice chair of the U.S. Civil Rights Commission and an adjunct scholar at the American Enterprise Institute as well. Abigail Thernstrom and Debo Adegbole, welcome to WNYC today. Good morning.
Thank you.
Good
very
to
much.
Be with you.
Abigail, how far do you go? We don't need the Voting Rights Act anymore or at all anymore, or just this part that was argued at the court yesterday?
Well, I mean, most of the Voting Rights Act is properly permanent. We're not talking about the whole Voting Rights Act. And, you know, the Voting Rights Act is the star in our constellation of civil rights laws. It was legislation is seldom perfect. In 1965, the Voting Rights Act was perfect legislation, and it transformed America. It enfranchised Southern blacks who, 95 years after the passage of the 15th Amendment, still couldn't vote, or the majority of them still couldn't vote. No, we're talking about one provision in the Voting Rights Act, which was always supposed to be temporary. Emergency was supposed to expire in 1970, has been repeatedly renewed, and is now set to expire in
2031.
But okay, so the issue here is whether the issue in front of the court yesterday was whether certain states, Debo, can be singled out for supervision under the Voting Rights Act. In this particular case, Texas. I guess you would argue that they should, correct?
Absolutely. The historical record is clear, and while Professor Thernstrom points to the notion that this provision of the Act was supposed to expire 5 years after it was passed, the understanding was that the discrimination would stop. The reason that Congress has reauthorized the preclearance provision, the federal preclearance provision of the Voting Rights Act, so many times is because discrimination in voting in certain parts of the country has been much more difficult to dislodge than any of us ever imagined. And they have recognized that if we don't dislodge this discrimination, our constitutional promises are not being kept. And that is what our democracy turns upon. That's the issue.
So, I don't disagree, by the way, with the fact that it needed Section 5 needed repeated renewing. Mm-hmm. It's a question of whether it should have been renewed for 25 more years in 2006.
So the argument, Abigail, is really whether or not there is persistent racial discrimination that would result in disenfranchisement based on race that continues today?
That continues at a level at which you need extraordinary intervention and an extraordinary remedy, which for the most part is race-based districting, reserved seats for black and Latino candidates. Now, and by the way, it's not all of New York City. It's three boroughs in New York, and
right.
it's the trigger for coverage was changed in what I regard as an irrational way. The coverage of the southern states was absolutely appropriate. Now, I mean, the question is, and it's always at the heart of civil rights debates, where are we today in terms of racism in America? And where there are, and with respect to the Voting Rights Act, where there are still pockets of race-driven voting, can we solve those particular problems? Because really they're on the periphery now of American politics, in my view. Can we address them through another permanent provision of the Act, Section 2, and the 14th and 15th Amendments of the U.S. Constitution? Do we need this kind of draconian emergency legislation that, do we need this particular provision?
Here is Justice Souter questioning from the bench yesterday and indicating that he thinks we do.
Congress thought so, and I would have thought so too, that there is something to be concerned about on the issue of circumvention, that in fact the attitudes have not so radically changed.
Not so radically changed as to not require the federal government to single out certain states where things are worse than in other states. So, Abigail, I guess it's almost a perception question, isn't it?
Well, in part it is a perception question. In part it is a data question. That is, Justice Kennedy kept going back, I think it was four times, he went back to the question he's got in his head, which is, well, if Alabama, then why not Ohio? I mean, what is today the distinction between the covered jurisdictions and those that are not covered?
So, Debo, what is the distinction?
Or, by the way, boroughs in New York City that are covered and not covered.
Yeah. Well, Debo, maybe we should talk about the New York example. I should know which three boroughs are covered and which two are not, but I don't off the top of my head. But
sure. It's Kings County,
Brooklyn,
New York County,
Manhattan,
which is Manhattan, and the Bronx County.
And these are counties more prone to racial discrimination
no.
in voting than
let me explain, Brian,
Queens or Staten Island?
Let me explain, because Professor Thernstrom has put a lot of different issues on the table.
Go ahead.
So
in
1965, there was an undeniably widespread problem of voting discrimination. Congress set about trying to figure out how to uproot the discrimination in the places where it was most entrenched. And to do so, they established something that was what they call a coverage formula or a trigger that depended upon levels of voter registration and turnout, and also places that had employed a test or device. These were the notorious tests used to prevent voters from voting, primarily African Americans in the Deep South. But later, Congress extended that test or device to encompass voting tests that required only that elections were conducted only in English, and that's how many other places, including New York, came to be covered. The idea, though, that the discrimination has stopped or that the measure is draconian puts it exactly backwards. The discrimination that we described in our brief and that Justice Souter recounted is what is draconian. It is draconian to think that today there are still African American and Latino voters who, through trickery and machinations, are being deprived of their equal right to vote. And the discrimination in these places where Section 5 continues is not simply an occasional violation. What we saw and what we described to the court were repetitive violations where, after a court issues an opinion, they try and find another way to achieve the discriminatory end. The court issues an order saying that you need to redraw districts, and on the eve of the election, they move a polling place to a place that African Americans or Latinos can't easily get to. This is the repeated pattern in many of the covered jurisdictions. And the more important point to what Abigail Thernstrom said is that the discussion we're having is a policy discussion. We had that debate in Congress. Both Professor Thernstrom and I testified to Congress, and we made these points. And the vote in the House of Representatives was 390-33, 98-0 in the Senate, and there's nothing in the Constitution.
In
policy or common sense that requires the court to have a different ruling.
So, Abigail, the court would be what they call activist in this case, wouldn't it, by telling Congress that it may not pass a certain law? rather than, you know, deferring to the will of the people as expressed through their elected lawmakers?
Well, two things. By the way, let me just correct one thing. New York got covered because the trigger was changed to include turnout in the 1968 presidential elections, and then the criterion was below 50%. 1968 turnout was low across the country, Nixon versus Humphrey, and it fell just below 50% in those three boroughs. That's how it got covered. But in any case, activist court, no, look, we're talking here about race-driven districting, which is the remedy of choice when the Justice Department finds that a suspect jurisdiction has not carried its burden of proof. The burden of proof is on the defendant rather than the plaintiff. The reverse from customary law. When a jurisdiction, Manhattan, hasn't carried its burden of proof that there has been nothing racially questionable about voting. And because you're talking about racial classifications, you have got serious constitutional questions here. And especially when, this kind of legislation can only be supported in extraordinary circumstances, which is what the Supreme Court said in 1966.
So we're going to
signed off.
We're going to run out of time soon. But Abigail, is anyone harmed, in your opinion, by having the Voting Rights Act,
yes,
or do you think it's just unnecessarily cautious?
No, I do think it's putting a ceiling on black political aspirations. It has
a ceiling.
A ceiling on black political, yes, a ceiling. And anybody who wants to look at my
Let's
New York
Times. Let's be serious,
Times,
Abigail.
Look at my New York Times piece yesterday. The argument is made in a very abbreviated way. But when you have got almost all black candidates running on safe political ground, that is majority-minority districts, and not being encouraged to create biracial coalitions or multiracial coalitions and move to the center politically, you are creating a black political class that, by and large, is on the sidelines of American politics.
So, Debo, to take that seriously, if you look she's saying if you look at Congress, right, forget President Obama for a minute, if I'm understanding Abigail correctly, if you look at Congress, if you look at state legislatures, you don't have blacks being elected from other than majority black districts that were carved out as such to be that.
They don't even try to run.
And so they don't try as a result of that redistricting. Take it seriously and give us an answer, and then we're out of time.
First, importantly, this issue is not on the table in this case. The plaintiff in this case does not even district, so Professor Thurnstrom's trying to inject an issue for a later case into this one. Second, it is putting things exactly upside down to suggest that the act that opened up segregated legislatures because of racially discriminatory practices to equal opportunity. Please let me finish, Abigail. I listen to you.
Okay, I just want to tell you, I do agree with that.
Okay, thank you. The idea that the act that is trying to take account of polarized voting patterns. In Alabama, Barack Obama got 10% of the white vote. In Mississippi, he got 11. In Louisiana, he got 14. These are the states that are at the heart of this provision that we're talking about. And the entrenched racially polarized voting patterns can be used by officials when they draw district lines to carve out and make sure that minorities cannot participate in the political process. The Voting Rights Act did not start discrimination. It is a response to discrimination that is part of our history, and to call it anything else is really sophistry.
And the Supreme Court will have the final say on this by the end of June. Debo Adegbole, Director of Litigation for the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund. Abigail Thurnstrom, her latest forthcoming book, Voting Rights and Wrongs, The Elusive Quest for Racially Fair Elections. Thank you both very much for debating this out.
Love your show, Brian.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, coming up in just a minute. a subcontinental economic indicator, parents in India having second thoughts about arranged marriages with Americans.